the November meeting of the regular meeting of the Improvement Committee called to order. Looks like we have just discussion items on the agenda today, nothing, no action items. And we're starting with the Integrated Water Master Plan Town Hall.
Yeah, I'll just give a brief synopsis of what was experienced at the last town hall. We had Travis counted about 160 people in attendance that evening. We and the consultants presented for about 45 minutes, give or take, and then we took public comment till about, what was it, 8:30, Stephen?
Yes.
I believe it was 8:30, yeah. And we're going to take that recording, and Amelia's working on getting that speech to text so we can create a new fax, FAQs to get out on the website. Yeah, people came. They provide their comments and their questions. I think, Marty, I saw you there that mm-hmm. evening.
And the recording has been posted.
Oh, it has?
Yes. It's right on the same page.
You mean Gail's recording or?
Gail's recording. It's right on the same page with the Integrated Water Master Plan, and then you go to the town hall meeting. There's a tab box for that. It's right in there with the presentation.
And then Amelia's working with IT. For our video file, it says it's corrupted or something, and so she's going to try to get them to uncorrupt it so we can post that as well. So that's really all I had, unless you had any questions specifically.
No, I wasn't there. I was on a cruise ship, and I wasn't sad that I wasn't there.
We were.
But I did hear one comment from an RMA board director yesterday that was very, very appreciative, and he said the highlight for him was it's not a barcode. What's the
QR code? I did that too, Randy.
And he said that was. That was outstanding.
Okay. That, really easy to do, too. So whatever you all want a QR code for, I'm in.
All right.
Great.
Marty, any comments?
I listened to it, and I thought the meeting went very smooth. I thought there wasn't much disruption, or everybody seemed to be civil. And I thought people learned a lot. I thought it was good.
We had a good moderator.
I guess so, yeah.
And the gist of it was to go over where we're at in the process, which is still the foundation of the study.
Yeah, we were kind of primarily going over the water demands analysis that the consultants were at. So that was kind of part two of three parts of the study. The third part is going to be, now that we're forecasting supply, we're forecasting demands, and then how we're, you know, what are the alternatives to meet those demands? And that'll be part three. And that'll deal a lot with infrastructure and different items that we would use to meet that and how it would be met.
What's the status of the other consultant we hired to look into permitting Clementia?
We have a meeting, not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday with mm-hmm. the DDW. And so they're going to provide a brief presentation that we're going to look at beforehand. And then we're all going to provide that to DDW and have a hour and a half meeting.
You're going to have a sit-down meeting with them?
No, it's going to be Zoom. I mean, a team.
We'll still be able to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then this is just the initial, hey, this is what we want to do. This is the basis for why we think we could be able to do it. And then they're going to come back with some rules and regs or what kind of requirements might they forecast that we might need to meet in order to utilize Clementia for municipal use, should we need to.
You know, along those lines, at yesterday's RMA maintenance committee meeting, it was brought up that they might be interested in dredging the edges of Claro and from the high water to where low water is now, if you were to take out, if you were to just dredge that material out, say 10 feet deep at the where the low water is now around the edges, for recreational purposes. And I'm, wait a minute, let's get Michael involved in that and see if we can't do a quick look at how much water
Clementia
that would get us. And
did you say Claro or Clementia?
Claro.
Claro, okay.
Claro. Like, it was mentioned that at Bass Lake they did some dredging and dug some holes for the bass to sit in with some rocks and stuff, and it might fit in. So the first question that comes to mind, is it worth it? How much water, more water, would we get out if we were to team up on a project like that with them? And then, of course, what's down there? It's rock.
Well, depending on how much dredging they did, I mean, if they're dredging to get rid of some of the organics, potentially, I don't know why they would be dredging. What would be their need?
They want to be helpful.
Oh, okay. Oh, they're trying to make more space.
I'm trying to tie it to recreation.
Got it. I hear what you're saying.
But for our purposes, is there enough water there that it's worth looking at? That's the first question.
Right. So, I mean, to get 1 acre foot, they'd have to dredge, you know, an acre, 1 foot deep.
I talked to Rod about that same thing. He cornered me the other day, and he thought there was a rock where he wanted to excavate, or
okay.
He thought about excavating, because if it was rock, that's not very feasible. But.
Yeah, and that's probably part of the reason why when we looked at expanding Claro several years ago, they were looking at getting like 300 acre feet, and it was going to be like $13 million. And maybe that's because they were, mm-hmm. you know, taking a look at removing rock.
Mm-hmm.
I can definitely meet with them and see what their plans might be, and costs.
Well, I don't think we're to the cost thing yet. The cost may be prohibitive, because the more I thought about it after that meeting, you're going to have to separate the lake from the work, which is going to take some kind of cofferdam, and that may just blow the cost all to hell. But first step, is there really any substantial amount of water that would be gained? Right?
You know, that might be really good timing for when we start matching up our supplies and demands. And it's like, if we're, you know, something small like 25, 50 acre feet short, then something like dredging might be potentially feasible, as long as we're not dredging dead storage. If we can't get to it, that wouldn't do anybody any good. But
do we have a CAD file of the bathymetric study?
Yes, I can get that.
That has contours?
Yep.
And so we could see the actual slope of that bottom and its depth?
Absolutely.
And we could, the guy could trace out an area and see how much volume you could get.
Yeah.
I told Ron that we had something like that, but is it an AutoCAD file?
Yeah, I can get that from the consultant.
Yeah, why don't you get it?
Send it over to RMA if they want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Or if we had the time to just do a couple cross sections through there and put us in the ballpark of whether or not it's
there's really anything substantial to be gained. And then the discussion was to someone that really knows the mining around here was at the meeting, and so they were talking about you can do some, it's not sonar, but it's liner, something that can very easily tell you what's down there. Is it bedrock? Is it gravel? What's there to be that would have to be dug out?
You know, we used something similar to that when we put the Lake 11 pipe in. Can't recall the name of it now, but it was something similar to what you're talking about. You use sound. They drive sound, and then they get a depth of and a potential delta. If there's really dense, or if it's not as dense, they can tell if there's going to be a bunch of rock or not. So it sounds like what we're talking about might be, maybe the first phase might be discussions with our district engineer and getting those CAD files, and me meeting with him and the two of us kind of discussing, is there any low-hanging fruit that we could potentially see? And if there is, the next step, I think, would be to engage a geotech and see if it's actually feasible to remove it. You know, but before we take that step, we kind of see how much we need with this study, right? See if there probably is going to be a need, more than likely.
Yeah.
But, you know, before really spending any money, we'd want to take a look to see if what the need is.
Sure. That makes sense.
How far down is that lake right now?
Right now, I'd have to take a look, but it's at its lowest. We just started filling yesterday.
So how far could you walk from the shore to the water?
Somebody said it's
almost probably a football field.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Depending on where you're at on the shore. Where the ramp used to be, yeah, probably pretty, no, maybe half a football field.
So that's probably to be the limit of your excavation if you did do it.
Right? Yeah, because we're probably at our lowest right now. Because we just turned a pump on yesterday, so we're filling now. But I can get you. We take the reads every Wednesday. I can get you the level from last Wednesday.
That's what you could plug into the AutoCAD.
Yeah.
And see what that distance is, right?
Yeah.
Because we'll draw it over the map, and then they can take it into CAD and calculate what we might be able to get.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
It's my understanding that that they have some certified divers, RMA, and before we spend a lot of money on sonar and all this stuff, couldn't they just dive down and to where they want to do it and see what's actually there, whether it's rock or whether it's just soil that would be worth?
They might not be able to tell.
I don't think they have to dive, because you wouldn't be excavating where there's...
So you would just excavating what's currently exposed?
Yeah, there's more of the sides, because we don't want to get into the dead storage, because that doesn't really buy us anything.
Okay.
But we'd probably be looking at the, like Randy said, the kind of the low-hanging fruit, you know.
So the way I picture it is where the low water is right now, take that down 10 feet.
Oh, okay.
And transfer it back to where the high water is. What's in that triangle? What is it? Or is bedrock down 5 feet? So all you get is 5 feet or something. But you're absolutely right. We want to know if it's worth pursuing at this point.
Yeah, and I think that the first step would probably be just me to meet with the district engineer, and we take a look at what we could get. You know, assuming that we can go down a certain amount, and then just verifying that after there's a need with the geotech. But we don't want to be running a geotech in there until we know for sure that that's something that could be of interest for the study.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's probably not 13 million anymore, but if it was 13 million, that
may, as we look at all the alternatives of what's possible, that may be our cheapest way to go.
Well, if we can utilize Clementia without, you know, decimating it too much, you know, if we could put $2 million in the plant to make that work, A, we have a better plant, and we've got an existing reservoir. You know,
good point.
Oh, okay, thanks, Travis. Okay, so any more questions about the Integrated Water Master Plan Town Hall?
Nope.
I think so. Cal Poly SLO student project?
Yeah, so Cal Poly called me out of the blue saying that they have a potential student project that they, you know, could use some assistance on finding for their students. And at first they were asking about the wastewater treatment plant. I'm like, well, there's probably some things I could, you know, find for them. But then I thought, wait a minute, we've been talking about, you know, the water plant and the pretreatment needs that were never really put in place for the membranes to protect the membranes from manganese. Because right now we say we have a certain amount of capacity, and most of the time we do, until it's a hot summer day and the manganese comes up from the reservoir. That greatly decreases our capacity. So my thought would be, let's make their student project. What would need to happen to the plant to assume the existing capacity that we say we have, and then build a capacity should we need to, and then also take a look at increased efficiency of the plant. We talked about taking a look at the sludge drying beds and just kind of an overall look at if the district was going to move forward with another plant upgrade, what would it look like? I think this would be really good, a really good experience, not only for the students, but it would also give the district a lot of good preliminary information that when the board did decide to do the study for the plant, the consultants wouldn't be starting from scratch. And that students might come up with some really good ideas because they haven't learned not to yet. So it's going to start out, they're going to basically be answering a pseudo RFP, and then there's going to be several teams, and they're all going to be hired, and the teams will, you know, be providing different plans, and it won't take too much of our time, probably just providing them questions, answers to questions from time to time, and then you know, there's going to be kind of initial problem statement, and we'll probably be able to attend via Teams, and then there'll be like a presentation at the end, which, you know, if we can get approval to go down to San Luis Obispo, great. If not, Travis and I will probably just go down on our own dime to hear the presentations from the students. And then we can take those reports and provide them to the next consultant we hire to figure out what we're going to do with our treatment plant. We've got a couple of issues with our water plant. The first issue is that we have plant 2, which is our filter plant, which is, you know, it's getting pretty old. It's going to be needing some major retrofitting here in the next, you know, 4 to 5 years. And so we need to answer the question, do we continue on with this old plant or do we do something different? And then on the other side, we have the new upgrade that works pretty well, although somewhat maintenance intensive, but doesn't address the manganese issues that we tend to prop up. And so, you know, in my mind, that plant 1, which is a membrane plant, needs some kind of pretreatment in front of it to protect the membranes to be able to settle the manganese out. So be able to answer questions like, do we add more membranes and put more pretreatment in? Or do we do something completely different? Do we keep the plant 2 or do we convert plant 2 into pretreatment? What's a more efficient way of getting rid of our sludge? And then, you know, manganese prevention in the first place in the reservoir. So they'll be taking a look at all of those things. And all it will cost us is some of our time. So I'm excited.
So this is a class project.
This is a culminating undergrad project, like their capstone project.
What does that mean, capstone?
Well, it's kind of like it's the capstone of their education. Oh. So this is kind of like their...
Their thesis.
It's their undergrad thesis, if you will.
Their seniors. And what's the name of the class?
I think it's probably called like capstone or senior project or something like that.
It's their whole winter project, so it'll encompass their whole winter class schedule.
Is the whole class involved or just a segment of the class?
I believe the whole class is
involved. The whole class is involved. What they do is they take the class and they split it up into teams, and each team tackles a certain issue. One will tackle finance, one will tackle construction, one will tackle, whatever. But they break it up into three or four groups, and then at the end, they bring it all together. Their instructor is overseeing. But these are, like I said, these are engineers that are about ready to graduate. It's kind of like their senior project to finish off their education. And it's free.
But you get what you pay for.
Well, yeah. I understand that, but
we are talking about, 22-year-old
kids. Yes, yes. But, if they have good mentoring, from the professors, they could come up with some interesting ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, you're getting the professors along with the kids.
Well, at least get them to list out all the flow rates and everything so the consultant can just take it all easy.
There's a fair amount of work that could be done out of that.
Yeah.
We could take advantage of.
That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. That, and it's a nice way to help give back, be involved with.
Mm-hmm. Right. We'll probably end up with reams of paper that they...
I hope not.
For their senior project, they got to make it look like they've done a lot of work.
Well, it's something you guys can have read at the, when you're sitting at home and not drinking your brandy.
No. That's your job. You summarize it and let us know what's in there.
Yes.
When I'm sitting at home drinking my brandy.
We'll stress the importance of a very detailed executive summary.
I'm sure that the district can afford to send you down there for a day or two and take it all in. Okay, anything else on that?
Nope.
Let's move on to the water plant membranes.
All right, talking about membranes, just for your information, we have three trains of membranes in Plant 1. Each train has two cassettes. Each cassette holds 87 modules. Our membranes have an average life cycle of 7 to 10 years. Current membranes were placed in operation in 2015, so they're about eight years old on average. Many of the membranes have been stained by manganese and are not repairable. In July of this year, we recently ordered 15 replacement modules, and of those 15, we've utilized 11. For replacement.
We just used three more yesterday.
Oh, and we just used three more yesterday. So we need to order some additional modules, and there's a huge price for shipping with these modules. If we just order the five modules, it's a per module cost of $2,500. If we order 15 modules, we get a per module cost of $1,900, so there's a $600 savings. And I asked the question, and Travis proposed, why don't we just replace, a cassette every other year, and then get the new cassette, put it in the train, pull the old cassette out, pull all the modules that are still good, and have those ready for a replacement, because they are at their end of their remaining useful life. I believe the module quote, the last time we got a cassette quote, it was $150,000.
I just got that new one.
Okay.
I just got the quote from the guy this morning to replace the whole cassette, not the actual frame, but just the modules, $153,000 and some change.
$154,000. Let's see. $154,000. I just want to do the math on that for the per module. And there's what, 87?
87. That includes shipping, packaging, everything.
So if you bought a whole cassette, it's $17.70 per module versus the $1,900 if you bought 15. It really makes sense to at least buy 15, because if you just buy the 5, it's $2,500. So I'm thinking that we may want to, that the rate that we're utilizing membranes and we're getting towards the end of our design life, we may want to plan for next fiscal year at potentially budgeting for a cassette and having that, we would just put it right in and then we just take the other cassette out, save what modules we can for replacement, and remove the rest.
How long ago did we buy the 15?
We bought the 15 in July.
And we've used it. And that's only going to accelerate, right? Because these are at the end of their useful life.
Or getting close. The manganese did a number on a lot of them.
I don't know why we would buy 15 that's theoretically going to last us 4 months.
Well, if that gets us to the fiscal year, we didn't really budget for a lot of membranes. There's no CIP budget for a big purchase.
What about the reserves?
Yeah, we that would be something that, we would be...
Updating,
you'd have to update the budget to include that cost.
Why the budget? Why not reserve?
I think we can spend reserve money as needed, but I think it has to be put into the budget, if I'm not mistaken. You may know more than me on that. I'm not a financial guy. But last time if we spend a lot of money like that, it has to be budgeted. I think we would just...
And somehow it's budgeted, but it may not be part of the actual budget. It might be part of reserves that we extend.
It's not operating.
It's not operating budget.
Right.
Do you know if we specifically have money in the reserves for the modules?
I know that we have reserves that cover wastewater and that we can utilize. That there's no earmark per se.
Well, some of the reserves are pretty detailed in each line item of what it's for.
Oh, you're talking about the last study that we did?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd have to get back to you on that.
But irregardless, it should be planned for.
Yeah, that's what kind of where we're getting at. And we'll make sure that this is also included with the CIP that they're working on right now. It needs to be a part of our CIP. I'm sure it is, but once we see the CIP and are able to review it, I'll bring that to the improvements committee.
I would bet your spreadsheet has a line item for that.
It probably does.
It has a projected date of buy-ins.
Right. Or something. It would still take the board to approve that expenditure, and I think you do have to update the budget because you're increasing your capital expenditure, but I could be completely wrong.
Just to throw something in, because... It's like 52 week lead time to get them. So they're backed up a year. And this quote right here states that an invoice would be issued for 30% of the cost up front, and then 70, then we'd have to pay the remaining 70 once we have received them.
It says a year?
Well, I'm going to have to verify that, because the last time we spoke in July, he said, if you want a cassette, and they also said it in the conference, there's about a 52 week. I was looking to see what it is here, but I would verify with him. But I don't know if that makes a difference. We would have to only put 30% up front, and then the other 70.
But we ran out of spares.
I have one left.
But you can't wait a year.
Oh no, we can get the modules sooner.
No. If we're going to replace a whole cassette at one time, not the frame, just the modules, it's about a year backlog.
But what he's asking is, like, if we just buy 15.
If we buy the 15, they have those in Canada. that they can that they have on the shelf.
So where we're going here is we need the 15 right now because we can't wait a year. So we're probably headed towards doing both, right? Get the 15 to get us, and then the 87 will be cheaper, but they're a year out.
Correct. Yeah. So it would be a year from the order date.
So it sounds like we might need to. Let me ask you: can we get 30?
I call Jason and I can ask him to see what they have available in Canada, and also to get. He just sent me this quote like while we were doing the meeting, so I didn't get a chance to look. I was looking to see if it would send the ship date, but I can always call him to see what the backlog is. But
and also know that the membranes, they have a shelf life
of a year,
of about a year. So you want to try to, you know, not overbuy membranes. I'm thinking if we can get 15 now, we can probably get 15 later. You know, we move forward with the 15 and then we approach, which we'd have to get board approval for regardless. And then we talk about, you know, does the board want to put the 30% down this year so we can get the clock started and get them ordered for the next year.
Can I ask a question? When we finish the upgrade to the sodium hypochlorite, that won't have any effect at all. The membranes will still be necessary because they're taking those larger particulates out of the water.
Yeah.
And it's just for plant one. Plant two has some different kind of a you know, physical, organic,
it's
mechanical.
It's a different type of membrane
system.
Yeah. So we need the hypochlorite for both trains.
Okay.
Good question.
Has the finance committee met yet this month?
No, sir. They meet at 10 a.m. this morning.
And Marty, you're on that?
Yeah. It sounds like Mimi's going to get involved, or the new guy, is it Mark?
Yeah.
The new guy will probably get involved on where the money's coming from. But seems like it's a good idea to get him involved right away so we could get this on the agenda, at least to buy the 15. There might be money in the budget that could be found for this year's budget.
Well, I can't be here for the finance committee, but if I was, I would start asking your question, which is there's got to be a line item for this in reserves, mm-hmm. but we know we're not 100% funded in reserves. Mm-hmm. And how does that, what happens there, right? We don't even know what percentage our reserves are. So, yeah, there's a line item there. There's some money in there, but we only have a percentage of that available.
That's a
finance committee.
I would think for sure they could, right? There's money in reserves for 15 modules, but...
Yeah, wastewater, when I looked at the fund estimates, which, you know, I have no idea if they're actually when I looked at the estimates, wastewater reserve was doing pretty well.
This is water.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, there's at least enough for the modules.
Yeah. Okay.
So then... am I adding this to the board agenda based on the knowledge that we get from Mimi, either during the finance committee or...
Yeah, we have to move forward with the 15.
Yeah.
I mean, you could move forward with the 5, but it'd be silly to spend the extra 600.
Absolutely. And I think it needs to be a topic at the finance committee, at least to know how that system works.
We don't have to act on it, but we could tell
Mimi to find out how much
Mimi to figure it out.
Right.
And then by you telling me now,
to add it to the board agenda, then right. we can come to the board with all the information that the board needs to make a decision.
Yeah, I think this month for the board, it's going to be approval of buying 15.
Yeah.
While the rest of this, how this all settles out.
Probably approval of the 15, if you wanted to start that year.
30%. You
know, maybe do the 30% this fiscal year, if you can find it.
Well, I'm going to leave that up to Marty and the Finance Committee on that one. But for our purposes, we need at least the 15 here shortly.
Yeah, go ahead, Travis.
As I'm sure you realize, this is going to be a ongoing item with the membrane plant because that's our upgraded plant. So I don't know if it... I don't do finance, but I don't know if we need to make considerations for membrane replacements in our budget every year, or if the board can say, hey, you know, every other year we'll replace a module for like the next 6 years.
It would go into budget.
You know, but just wanting to, this is going to be an ongoing thing for as long as we have this plant.
So I like your idea of replacing every other year, but we got to get there. How many are we going to use this year while we're waiting for 87? Are we going to use 30, 45?
Yeah, it might be another. It didn't look like there was a big difference in cost per modules. Per cassette versus the 15, it was about a $200 per module difference. So it's not like there's a huge economy of scale. So in a sense, we could limp along till we got our first module. I mean, our first cassette. Should we want to? At the end of the day, if you have bad modules, and we do track these, we have a huge module map, Excel-based module map that we use, and if you don't replace them, you just lose capacity. It's not like plant one stops working, you'll just be slowly decrease capacity.
Well, but once the problem is though, and to attack on that is once they are based on LRV log removal values, what they remove from the water. Once it gets down to a certain level, it'll alarm out, and until you fix them or repair them, replace them. That train will turn off, and you can't use it. And if I report an LRV below 4 to the state, then that's a violation.
Are you saying the whole train will shut down?
The whole train, because we can't just shut a cassette off. There's 2 cassettes per train. We can't just, this is not advanced enough.
So you would lose one-third of your capacity.
I would lose one-third of the capacity, so.
But if worse comes to worse, let's say one train shut down, we've got 2 other trains. We would only go down to 60. I mean, it would be bad, but we'd go down to 60s.
We would still be able to produce about 3.5 million gallons. It's just that the higher the flow, the more the pressure on the membranes, the quicker they're going to break and need repairs. So it's not just, hey, you know, we can only, and because we can only close so many stacks too, because we were like putting broken membranes in stacks and closing stacks. You can only close so many on the, because you can only close 11 stacks out of the train before you have to take that train offline. So there's several factors, TMP, high TMPs, the LRV, the removal is the big one, and then however many stacks that we can close. So and then also to having the time and staff, because it's 2 people minimum all day to do repairs. And
really?
Yeah, it's very, very high maintenance, and depending on how many repairs they're in, they could only... Yes, when they did repairs last time, I had two guys there for 8 hours, and they only got through three stacks because there was that many breaks.
How many modules in a stack?
There's three modules per stack.
Okay.
And so what they have to do is when you do the testing to see where your breaks are at, it doesn't specify which module in the stack, so you have to check all three of them. And time consuming, and when you're limited on staff and how staff is here, because I only have full staff 2 days a week. And one of those days a week is all of our weekly testing for the state. So we get limited on when we have time to do stuff, unless you want to give me a night crew. but what, you know, and that's something to talk about later on that might actually have to happen. But South San Joaquin, who has the same setup we have, they specifically have a night crew. That's all they do every night, 7 days a week, is repairs. They have more they have 15 trains instead of four, but it's, you know,
their night staff is two people.
I think they have four people on staff because they have people doing repairs and then people running
but
the plant.
They're a lot
bigger, you know, but that just shows the intensity of the repairs, and they actually have a really good setup where they can identify which module because of the way they have their whole thing set up. We don't have that capability, so we have to actually pull every module to check for repairs in the stack.
Travis, would it be fair to say that if we had really good pre-treatment, it would put a lot less stress on the membranes?
The pre-treatment, I 100% agree with that in the manganese, because if we, a lot of our membranes are so manganese stained that the UV light can't penetrate it to do repairs, and so it pretty much nullifies that cassette. I mean that module. Now, one of our new hires, he has they had manganese problems on, you know, just staining other equipment, and they used a solution of 50% hydrogen peroxide and 50% water, I think it was. But I don't have clearance to use hydrogen peroxide on the membranes. They damage the membranes. So, and since you can't pull off the cap to clean it, you know, it's...
clearance by the manufacturer.
Yeah, by GE. And because if we do anything, if we add a chemical to that that's not approved by them, they'll immediately nullify the warranty on it. So, a lot of times takes a while, you know, to try to get things moving to where we can spend a day doing repairs, and sometimes we get a lot, sometimes we get little. There's actually been a few times where I've had to bring in staff on overtime because to do repairs or during the middle of the summer, or we'd have been in some trouble. So it is, the membranes are very, very high maintenance. Pre-treatment would probably take care of the manganese staining because it would remove it from there and anything that's settling. And because anything that would, since it's a vacuum, not a pressure, it's actually pulling the membranes instead of pushing it in there. So any particle, any minute particle that can be removed from pre-treatment, ergo a said basin settling, would help, especially with the manganese.
Just off the top of your head, what percentage of the membranes do you think are manganese stained?
Every single one of them on the bottom stack of all six stacks.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Some of them are to the point where we can't get them, and we've actually, that was one of the last ones that we replaced the other day, and some of them were still able to do it. One of the things that we want to try, but I'm kind of hesitant because it'll really screw up, is we take those bottom ones and put them at the top, and we take the top one and put them at the bottom. Gotcha. And we're going to try that on one of the trains to see if that helps. But if we do it for all of them, then we've
law of unintended consequences.
Yes. So I have to before I make any decision like that, I have to think, okay, what could this potentially be? Because during the summer, Plant 2 can't meet the needs of the district.
And Plant 2 is getting old.
And we need to replace,
That's the timeliness of the study.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things that I don't, when this plant was decided to buy, I don't think a lot of stuff may not have been known, or I wasn't involved in that.
Well, manganese only comes up once in a while, so that they may have missed the manganese in their testing protocols.
The manganese is there all summer.
Oh, it is.
It's okay. There all summer, and it doesn't go. We're just now getting non-detect hits right now.
I'm sure the salesman had a good pitch on why the manganese wasn't going to be a problem.
So it's what we have. And so, and this is what I have to deal with to make sure that you guys still have good water. But it's going to be an ongoing thing from the day it started till the day you guys decide to put a different plant in.
It'll have... 'Cause
you have to put in a whole different plant to find a different solution to cleaning the water out.
We should have did what it was initially set up for, was put plant 3 and just keep it all conventional. But that's neither here nor there.
It's going to be really hard to, it would be almost impossible to cut bait at this point.
We bought the
horse.
We need to figure out how to get better pre-treatment, more contact time with the chemical, and just pre-treatment.
This is going to have ramifications for the if the plant doesn't need to be expanded. Currently, there's an agreement for phase 2 that if Consumers River Rancho North call for phase 2, they have $500,000 that they've already put in. We're going to need to know the cost of what phase 2 would actually cost. So that's another reason to get the study done.
Is there room to expand it?
Yes. There's an empty one. It can go up to 4 trains.
Oh, okay.
But to put as soon as you put that 4th train in, you have to turn off plant 2 because it uses plant 2's contact chamber.
But so, I would argue that we don't have the capacity, even if you put another train in, we don't have the capacity when the manganese comes.
Correct. Unless you do some
pre-treatment
construction out of plant 2.
So it's not just as simple as adding membranes like everybody thought
right
back in the day. There's going to be more to it than that, because unfortunately when you have the peak capacity need is when the manganese rears its ugly head.
As this year we were kind of lucky, the right now that plant right now is set up to run 4 MGD, 4 million gallons a day. I was only able to run plant 1 at 1.5 million. If I went any higher than that, then we had manganese breakthrough. And I had to run plant 2 at its max. And that was kind of, where we're at. We started going any higher than that, and there's going to be brown water in the system.
It's kind of like the 20-year-olds living at the 80-year-old's house, and 80-year-old's the one still going to work and being responsible.
Well, maybe our friends at San Luis Obispo will come up with some
That's looking
new,
pretty good now, huh?
Some new process that will take care of our manganese.
I am going to try to advocate for that study in next fiscal year, for sure.
Okay, so Marty, you're going to discuss this at finance, the modules at finance?
Yes.
And I'll add it to the agenda for the board meeting next week.
Okay. We beat this up enough? Sounds like it. All right, let's move on to our...
This is an interesting topic.
For chemists and civil engineers.
Well, it gets
those of us that don't have a real life.
Oh, like me? Okay, good.
SB 170 project update.
Okay, so we're about at the 90% design level. I've asked the engineer to come up with a really good intake guard design. We have two openings that let water into the intake. And currently there's no gates there, they've dissolved, and we use a board on a stick to get in. And so, I mean, that works, but my concern is that when we do the safety improvements, that if we're currently utilizing water and it's going through the intake, there are kids that from time to time walk across the dam for whatever reason. And my worry is that one of the kids falls over on the water side, swims to the shore, and gets sucked into the intake. So we need to, I've asked the engineer to provide an adequate people catcher where, you know, the suction will not be too great and they can climb out, so it'll be some kind of a bar. The initial design that they came up with showed us anchoring something into the stream bed, and I want to try to avoid all those environmental concerns and constraints when you work in the stream bed. If we can keep it attached to the intake, I think we're going to be better off. So we're working on that design right now. So that's kind of where we're at.
Did they ever give you an estimate?
No, we haven't gotten an estimate yet. We'll get it once we get that design done. I think they'll be able to give us an estimate.
How far below water are those openings?
Travis, depending on the year.
Well, if there's no water there, they're like a foot up from the bottom. If it dries up to where they're not going through, but generally you'll get some going through all year because, you know, and going down the CIA.
I'm just trying to picture, you know, the tragedy that happened was due to the amount of suction that we create when the pumps are on.
On top, I think they came in from the top of the forebay.
Right, but we're talking about that same kind of situation, right? Someone
similar in the situation,
water,
yeah.
Where we're sucking a lot of water through those openings,
and that was never addressed.
How much suction is there, and how far below water?
It's pretty high velocity. If you have 1,000 CFS going through there,
yeah,
it's pretty. You count just 2 3x3 opening, and that's a lot of velocity.
So if you just put an iron cage over it, you may be creating something where someone gets sucked up against it.
Yeah, you have to spread out the velocity with the large structure.
And that's why they were talking about going out.
Yes. So my thought was, like, you know, we're taking a look at what I call the sticking velocity, and you know, trying to determine what that might be, and can we build something that can be anchored onto the forebay, maybe have a slight slope.
But it's still a cage.
It'd still be a cage.
You. Okay.
But if you can fan that, you know, flow rate over a larger area, in theory the velocity would go down. And if you can slope it up towards the top, they give that person a better chance at not sticking and being able to climb out. Because to my knowledge, that forebay has never been designed at the beginning to have a guard for the two gates coming in, which I think is an inherent flaw, because, you know, people don't know any better. They don't think to expect that. And yeah, people shouldn't be hanging around but there always is going to be someone, and we'd hate to repeat that. We will not repeat that.
Yeah. The fact that they shouldn't be there isn't going to negate a
multi-million-dollar lawsuit against us if it, something happens.
And the fence, and the fence that's going to get blown down by the river or no trespassing sign are not sufficient.
So you can't make a barrier in that zone?
Well, that's what we want to do.
Well, this is a gate of some sort that's wide, but isn't there a way to keep people out of a zone of the intake that goes further back?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that we're taking a look at. Like, you know, what I've seen those when you go swimming or boating at a reservoir, there's usually a portion of the reservoir that keeps the well away from the intake. And I don't know if that's a net or if that's just buoys, like usually, don't go past the buoys.
Usually buoys, yeah.
But this is a river, so it's just going to blow, you know, it's just going to...
Most of that is just for boats, right? Keep the boats away from the end.
And because we have so much flow going, if we tried to put up some kind of fencing, or it's just going to get blown down every year. But if we can get something that's hard with bars that, you know, that also won't be a maintenance headache for Travis's crew, you know, and maybe it'll protect the forebay from getting large items stuck in there if that's ever an issue. So we're kind of struggling with that right now. Once we get that, then we'll have the design complete, be able to get you guys a estimate.
Okay.
Let's see, at the water facility, we've had the electrical portion being reviewed by the district electrician. I reviewed the plans. I didn't see any issues from a process standpoint.
No, he just was, he said everything looked fine. He was just requesting maybe some big light stands above.
Right.
You know, but other than that, he said everything else looked good.
He had a couple other issues, and I forwarded those to the engineer.
No.
Marty, did you have any comments on that?
No.
And then our wastewater facility, chlorine gas and sodium hypochlorite contact tank improvements. I asked for an update for rehabbing the existing contact tank and then adding concrete capacity to that contact tank. There's a number of alternatives, you know, ranging anywhere from, you know, $4.5 million down to $3.2 million roughly. I asked for the UV cost analysis just because the hypochlorite costs were getting up in the UV range. So I thought, well, before we take that final step away from UV treatment, that we take another look at that. There, if you see on the attachment, project alternative number 5, which is the UV, they add sodium hypochlorite system improvements because there's a thought that those might be needed for the actual dissolved air flotation and filtration needs, which is counter to my experience. So what Travis is doing is we're setting up a sampling protocol to see if we to evaluate the performance of the treatment plant with no hypochlorite, with no pre-hypochlorite, and evaluating it with pre-hypochlorite. Because if we can remove pre-hypochlorite from project alternative number 5, it becomes cost competitive with the other alternatives. And regardless, even if we weren't interested in evaluating UV versus sodium hypochlorite, it would save us chlorine every year, not having to buy as much hypochlorite if we can get along with treatment without using the pre-chlorine.
But you're doing a life cycle cost to see if maybe the power requirements would make it worse.
Yeah, that's the second part of this. Is I've asked for a life cycle cost for hypochlorite, and I've asked for a life cycle cost for UV, which would cover like lamp replacement, labor to clean, power costs. So he'll get back to us on that. Once we get all that information and Travis's sampling program, we'll meet again and see if we can't find a way forward. Once we have a way forward and a recommendation, we'll bring that to improvements committee, and then we can move forward with design.
Yeah, I'd go back to reserves, or I don't know where this money comes from, but we started down this path because we got a grant that we wanted to spend, and now we're at this point where, yeah, it's a great idea. Where does the money come from?
Well, we do have options. We can just move forward with the sodium hypochlorite changeover, and that's about, looks like about $1 million. Not do the contact tank replacement, but knowing that eventually we will have to replace the piping that was put in for a temporary contact tank, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, we have a couple of breaks in there that happened this year. We're going to have to do some repair on the piping this winter anyways.
So they put a temporary contact tank to get the contact time needed probably about 15 years ago-ish.
Yeah.
So it was considered temporary back then. So eventually, you will likely need to build a contact tank. But, you know, you could proceed potentially next fiscal year with just the sodium hypochlorite conversion, so you're getting off the chlorine gas, move forward with the conversion at the water plant, and then come back later at some day in the future and perform the chlorine contact rehab.
Except all three of these projects compete against each other. If we have limited resources, they all compete against each other, and we have to decide how much of each one needs can be sent to construction. What about, you mentioned once before that Atkins is looking into grants.
Yes.
Is that applicable to these?
The grants that grants that we're looking at, it's going to be more of a water augmentation grant. So covering things like being able to potentially put smart meters in, or being able to set up, put in the rest of the infrastructure such that we can provide recycled water to the gardens. But it's possible, it's always possible that, you know, a grant comes up and we go for it that would work for these projects.
Do we know if there's anything like in the infrastructure bill that's out there that would help us in these kind of things? Anything with water resources people that know about monies for poor little districts like ours?
I think the state of California is broke, isn't it?
I know. Yeah, I haven't seen anything. There's possible we'll also take a look at the USDA and see if there's anything they can help us with.
Yeah, the feds would be the only avenue, I would think, at this point. I mean, with the big infrastructure bill, I know there's water money in there someplace. I don't know how to get at it, but I don't think the state has any.
It just seems like it would be well worth our time to see if there's any money out there we don't know about. Because if you don't know about something,
yeah,
you don't know what you don't know. And
we get a lot of information on grants, and some may apply to us, some may not. Like I said, we've got Atkins working on trying to get some of that water augmentation related grants, and we're gonna, once we get done with the integrated water master plan, we'll have a clearer picture of what we should be looking at on that front. Mm-hmm. You know,
we belong to some associations that,
yes,
should be good.
I get emails all the time about, hey, this grant's coming up, and you go to look, does this apply to this or what we're looking for?
Maybe you can add that to the RFP for the San Luis Obispo kids to
find us some money.
Because grant writing must be part of what they're learning how to do. I know they're classes.
Probably not, but they'll end up getting stuck with it at some point.
Yeah. Right? Like you?
Couldn't hurt.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Couldn't hurt. Just add it as
a requirement.
As a
identify state item. And federal funding.
There you go.
There you go.
I like that.
And not just the regular state fund, revolving fund, but actual.
Yeah.
Problem is all that good money that they used to spend, that the federal government and state government had to release for wastewater treatment plants in the 70s. They
There's nothing like that anymore. They're really highly competitive.
They need to spend more money on bridges, right, Marty?
Yeah, that's the most important. Yeah.
Infrastructure. Transportation infrastructure.
You die if those things fail, right?
That's right.
Well, you die if you don't have water.
Okay. All right. Granted. So, my comment was more to the overall of all these projects, and Marty touched on it. The size of this, the nature of it, and the where our reserve funds are, has all got to be part of the budget discussions when they come up next. Right? We need dollar amounts to put on these projects, and then. Once we know where we're at financially, do we have money to do any of them?
Right.
Or all?
Right.
I can guarantee it's not all of them, but we need the financial information to decide where we're going to go on these. So that's the project update. Comments from the public, all the people standing at the podium. You got all those notes over there. Any further stuff, guys? Any, Marty, anything?
No. I guess I did have a question on Integrated Water Master Plan. When's the next one supposed to complete?
When's the what?
Next phase, this is phase three.
You know, working on it. We're starting working on it right now.
But do they have a timeline on when they?
No, I haven't received that timeline yet. I can get that. I'm thinking probably towards the end of the winter we'll have things wrapped up, complete, ready to provide something, you know, for approval. But there'll be another town hall for phase three. I don't know when that is going to be yet. And then there'll be probably a couple of special board meetings, you know, to look at some of the results, adopt, you know, the draft. So probably at least three more public meetings dedicated just to that. Two special board meetings and one additional town hall.
I'm in favor of these town halls. The only thing that caught my eye with that was the board didn't get a presentation on that same subject.
Like beforehand? Yeah.
Beforehand.
Yeah, the timing was just...
The only reason I wanted to hear it, so that's why I attended. But the board as a whole didn't get to hear that story. But it's available online to go read it.
Yeah.
I did that.
And we can, you know, I think the board will probably get a special board meeting prior to going to town hall. Would be my preference, and then have a special meeting after that for adoption, because then we'll present the alternatives, recommendations to the board. Board can provide comments. People can provide comments, and then any revisions that occur, take those to the town hall, give people enough time to review the information prior to taking to the town hall, get the comments taken in from the town hall, then provide that draft recommendation to the board at the second special board meeting. And then, you know, once those, any additional recommendations from the board at that time will be going into the next one that would be adopted in a regular meeting. Fine.
Makes sense to me.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. We are adjourned.